Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pentagram, dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal...
What is this odious evil you are listening to, my friends? I will explain in due course. Welcome to episode 201, if I am not mistaken, of Agitators Anonymous. The slow train just keeps on rolling. Slow train. It's a pretty good status quo track, isn't it? Yep. I'm here with the modern cultural references for all you pop pickers. Agitators Anonymous, I'm Alan Averill. What are we going to discuss today? Well, I'm going to discuss a couple of different things. I did these kind of podcasts way back sort of in the beginning. I suppose they were more of a commentary on a few different things that were happening. But I'm going to talk about AI, which you've just heard. I'm going to talk about the state of Dublin, or sorry, the fucking state of Dublin, man. It's fucking rotten, rotten to the core. Yeah, more or less that kind of thing. Inspired by a few conversations I had with a bunch of punks last week. So I'm going to discuss that a bit, because quite a lot of people have been messaging me about the Dublin show with Primordial coming up, that kind of thing. But before we get into that, let's do some housework, so to say. And that is that the show is ever sponsored by Metal Blade Records, who are the home of Primordial, have been for a long time, since the Gathering Wilderness album. And 40 years of independent history in the heavy metal world is a lot. When you consider that all the rest have sold their wares and long since retreated to the burbs for comfortable living. Metal Blade is still in there fighting the metal fight. So you can use the links underneath, and you can use the promo code AA2024, because that's the year apparently we are in, to go and get 10% off your order. There's a couple of band sponsorships coming up in the next few months. If you think that this seems like a good idea, and you've heard the band ads, get in touch. Right then. What you just heard was a song, a friend of mine. He, shout out to the Mick, to the Red Wildebeest. But he went on a little bit of an AI frenzy last week. I think with an application called Suno. I'm not sure. I probably should have looked at that before I started with these things. Anyway, look, that doesn't matter really what the application is, but they're simple applications, and you put in, you have to be quite precise in your description of these things, because the more precise your explanation, obviously what you get back is a bit more exacting. And so he wanted a power metal triumphant song about Agitators Anonymous. I will have to post the lyrics under this, because you have to follow the lyrics. They're absolute magic. They're like some sort of, I don't know, I was going to say North Korean karaoke reimagining of English, but that might be a little bit grim and a little bit of an overstretch. Let's say maybe South Korean, not North Korean. And he's been making a bunch of these little ditties, these little songs, and it spits out the artwork for you as well. And the artwork is that perfect size for Spotify. So you could literally just upload an album to Spotify. This, coupled with the fact that a friend of mine sent me a link to the Smile album by Brian Wilson, which appears to have been completed by AI. Yeah, we're almost at that stage now, because you've heard there at the top of the show that little ditty, the little Agitators Anonymous, that kind of sounds like Blind Guardian. At least the vocal sounds a bit like Hansi. The Uncanny Valley, which is what we call our ability as human beings to spot when something is off. Let's use Star Wars as a reference. One of those horrible versions of the last few Star Wars where they reanimate Carrie Fisher, who was a goddamn rebel if there ever was one. Carrie Fisher, have a little look into her life. Wow. Yeah, where they reanimate Carrie Fisher and they reanimate Princess Leia. I think they did the same for Peter Cushing. One of those awful movies ago. And you can see the difference. We're in the movie cinema and we can see. We go, okay, something that doesn't look quite right. That's what I understand to be the uncanny valley. But it's getting closer, because most people said, well, you know, 2 years ago, even when I was discussing this with people, they went, ah, you know what? You've probably heard Joe Rogan discuss it, etc., when he's going on about Jimi Hendrix sometimes. Or something about music, that people always want the real thing. It's just, the fact is that I'm not sure we, you know, are the demographic. It's young people growing up now. Will they notice or want the difference? You can hear in that little song, this could be, we know power metal songs that are like that. If you've ever been subjected to the very awful Nana War of Steel, absolutely unfunny joke novelty band. Realistically, they could be probably creating their songs with AI by now. If you program the parameters very carefully. And my friend obviously put a triumphant power metal song. Now, you can't put in the names of bands into his little app. You can't say Blind Guardian and Stradivarius and Lost Horizon. Lost Horizon, by the way, I must mention. Their two albums are perhaps the two greatest power metal albums of all time, of which I still listen to quite often. So power metal is not quite the dirty name it may be around some people's houses. Lost Horizon, yeah, go and check it out. Awaken in the World. Anyway, I digress off into a power metal fantasy for a moment there. You cannot put in band names, because they are, I suppose, on some level intellectually protected digital copyright or something. But you can give it enough instruction. My friend's been making songs about chicken rolls, about chicken, well, you know, the breakfast roll, the famous Irish breakfast roll, about Jimmy Savile. Of course he has. I mean, who wouldn't want to write a power metal song about Jimmy Savile? There's been a folk song about Agitators Anonymous, which I will end, or a country western song. So keep, you know, stick around for that. I'll end the podcast with a little delve into that, because I've always wanted to move into country and western. But it's getting pretty close. That Uncanny Valley is closing. And I could see, if you go back and listen to a bit of this little power metal moment there at the start, you can imagine this at 4 p.m. at Wacken on the third stage. And you can also imagine maybe, shall we say, less scrupulous musicians using this as a format or a tool to write songs. You could use it, I suppose, in theory, you could use it to write the song for you, including placing some musical theory into the description, and then it churns out the idea and you just copy the idea. You could theoretically do that. Strange territory we are entering into, my friends, as the gap between, let's say, the chump change technology, the stuff we are allowed to use. Obviously, there probably is technology out there, unbeknownst to me. Is it unbeknownst or unbeknownst? Anyway, unbeknownst to us, that literally can just say, you could say, I want a primordial album that has the drum production of Storm Before Calm, but I want you to use these amps in this studio. I want Martin Birch with his recording techniques from 1981. I also want a different singer, let's say, It's about time, I hear you say. I want Bruce Dickinson, primetime Bruce Dickinson, to be singing for an album that sounds like primordial between Storm Before Calm and Gathering Wilderness. And it could make you a different one, theoretically, every hour. We're at the cusp of that technology. And I think the music industry really doesn't know what to do with this. Because somebody told me, and I think it's fascinating that there are artists out there who are the biggest streaming artists of all time that many of us have just never heard. I've never heard Drake. I don't even know what he looks like. I presume it's a he. I don't even know where he's from. Whereas you could not escape Michael Jackson in 1986. Oh, run, Macaulay, run. You could not escape Michael Jackson. You could not escape Madonna. You know, these pop stars were just ubiquitous. They were omnipresent, no matter who you were in modern culture. Despite Drake's huge streaming numbers, I don't know anything about him. And the biggest streaming song, I was talking to my friend last night, is by The Weeknd. I don't know what that means. Is that a person? Is that a band? I presume it's not a band. I have no idea. This may sound funny to you if you're a little bit younger than me, because I just sound like old man shouts at clouds. But the point is, I do know that somebody released two Drake songs online that were made by AI, and fans of Drake didn't seem to really neither notice nor care. Now, I think heavy metal fans may notice or care. At least I hope they will, because that's part of the bond of heavy metal, the identification with something a bit more honourable, I suppose, that sets us apart from pop music fans. The fact that we do really seem to take what our musicians and our bands do to heart. It's a lifestyle choice. It's all these things. But when you play that little power metal bit off the top, and then you couple it with, you know, recent discussions. I can't remember what the name of that band of orcs, the sort of fantasy orcs who just play AI power metal. I'm still waiting for them to be announced at a festival next year and play as avatars. Who knows? Who knows what can happen, my friends? But stick around for my country and western song coming up, and I'll do my best to repost the lyrics. But it seems to me we're on the precipice in the next 2 or 3 years of being able to kind of turn the music industry on its head. And how would I feel as a musician to all of a sudden somebody sends me a link to... People have sent me links to new songs written by me, by AI, as in lyrics in the style of Alan Averill, and I found them a bit clumsy and awkward. But they keep improving. They keep improving. And what if someone was to send me a link going, hey, here's that missing album. And you know what? I think it's better than the album you did make. Or I've gone in and asked it to completely re-engineer, re-amp, re-record, remix an album I didn't really like the sound of. I mean, I remember when Primordial made Storm Before Calm in 2002, we hadn't really... We hadn't really used the proper, you know, that's this incoming technology yet. We were used to the old Academy where editing on tape, big amps, noise, drums, and we get there and, you know, because they were sort of moving studios, the very venerable and awesome Mags just sort of said, well, there's no amps this time. We're just playing through these kind of inputs. And you can hear on that album, there is a kind of slightly digital sound to it. We tried to make the best of it, but we didn't really understand the technology. Now, what if somebody went in and just said, you know what, let's remix Storm Before Calm and give it a more, a more dynamic, richer guitar tone. It looks like it's entirely possible. Just with AI. Interesting and strange times ahead, my friends, it would seem. Now, what I'm also going to get onto now is we have a gig in Dublin coming up on the 27th. Tickets running low, I am obliged to say. And I'm getting quite a lot of messages from people going, because 10 years ago, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago, we used to make a bit of a fuss about this. We used to call it Redemption Festival. And, you know, we've had Grave Miasma, we've had Souls to Fear. One year we had Rotting Christ playing the whole of Thy Mighty Contract, supporting us. We had Asphyx, we had Portrait, we had Ram, we had so many bands. When I think back, Winterfelleth, it was an incredible moment, and it was always something that I kind of looked forward to putting a bit more effort into, and that's why I felt the last show that we did here, which was you know, with Mourning Beloved and Death the Leveler, was a little bit of a downsizing, but we were just coming out of COVID, So this one, you know, Hellripper, Darkest Era and Miss Thurman coming from Iceland is a little bit more of a push back in that direction of making a bit more of an event. But I am getting messages from people going, what do we do? What is there to do in Dublin anymore? And last week I was at a Bellwitch show. Bellwitch, kind of, you know, droney doom kind of band, really good stuff. And lots of punk friends were there that I haven't seen in quite a while. And we got into a very big conversation. One of the guys from Lancome was there with his drone, his kind of drone band, which was sort of really interesting to listen to. And we were discussing sort of by proxy, not with him, but about some things that Lancome had been saying in the media, a bit about the kind of what the hell has happened to Dublin. And it's many of the things I've been echoing and things in this podcast. And I did one, I think, during the lockdown, which was maybe the city is over. And it got me thinking really about considering some of the things that are happening to the city. And we had some really good discussions about this with some of my, as I said, my punk mates in the Dublin scene, who are quite close to this, what could we call it, new, there's a kind of new wave of Irish bands who are embracing elements of Irish traditional music into the sound. You've obviously got Lancome, you've got, I'm not a fan of the Fontaines, but you've got Fontaines, you have The Scratch are another band. And a band called the Mary Wallopers. Not entirely my thing, Tread, but we got started when we were discussing, maybe you've visited Ireland and you were at a favorite famous pub called the Cobblestone, which is, I've been there many times. A really beautiful, old-fashioned pub, the kind of unreconstructed old Ireland where, you know, plots against the evil empire were formed over a few pints of the black stuff. Always had great Tread sessions in the corner, great Tread musicians, and they were just, you know, the government was about to, obviously had sold the land and were about to knock down the Cobblestone to build whatever, more empty apartments, more hotels that nobody can afford. Like they're just doing everywhere in the city. Sometimes I've had to stop recording the podcast because of the drilling and pounding of the land on my street, where they've just leveled entire elements of the street and are just obviously rebuilding tower blocks or apartment blocks. And those apartment blocks, I don't know if any of you have watched those documentaries on YouTube, which are about, ghost cities in China. And basically, people are investing money into property in cities that are empty. And then the government is artificially, propping up this housing market, and people are using this as an investment. It would seem that elements of the CCP are doing, or Chinese investment firms, or other foreign investment firms, I guess they mention it in dispatches, the Black Rocks and the Vanguards, are basically buying up huge sections of this city to let it sit empty in real estate as property investments. Why would they let it sit empty? You know, the rigors of the housing, the housing market are not all known to me. But it's clear to me that huge swathes of the city are rebuilt, reconstructed, knocked down, rebuilt again, and then they sit empty. And there's something not quite right going on. Now, you in your city, let me know in the comments or whatever if this is happening in your city as well. But it's in Ireland, what's clear is it's completely any sort of cultural quarter or any sort of cultural landmarks or any sort of anything that has a sort of inkling of, as in this case, Irish traditional music and are linked to it. The state and the government are just willing to just sell to property developers. They're willing to just knock it down at almost any cost because they really sort of, well, they just don't care, do they? You've maybe been out in Berlin and you've been to Friedrichshain, one or the other, isn't it? And you've seen those ads or billboards on the street. This is Friedrichshain. If you've come in here to live, you don't get to complain about the noise. You don't get to try and reconstruct the society. I remember one of the first times being in San Francisco, going and visiting Mike from Slough Feg, the very wonderful Lord Weird Slough Feg, who you should check out if you do not know, and talking to him about how San Francisco was changing. And this was 10 years ago. And he was just saying what's happening is that all the dive bars, all the scuzzy places, all the interesting streets and people, especially the artists who live in these areas, just can't afford to live there anymore. And they have to leave or go somewhere else. And that's what's happened in Dublin. An artist called David Kitt made this interesting post. Again, not really my kind of music, doesn't really matter. But as a fellow artist trying to live and, you know, survive in the city, in and around the city, he just basically said that it's just impossible. Rents are, insane in Dublin. It's one of the most expensive places to live. And it just pushes out all of the people who, well, basically gave, they gave the city a cultural aspect, a cultural quarter. They gave something artistic back to the city and were all just pushed out because rents just became exorbitant. Well, they're insane, basically. And his post was just about, you know, the fact that the state and the government, just like I said, they will, you know, venerate Sinead O'Connor after her death, but no one ever, well, that's a slightly different angle, but nobody offered to intervene, in her troubles leading up to that death. But that many, many artists were just sort of forced out of the, how could you say, the cultural conversation when it came to what Ireland represented, because it seemed that everything Irish was only measured in terms of how well it could do in terms of tourism. And so, again, coming back to this, the Berlin, and I saw it in Ljubljana. Paris has its kind of own energy, but you see it in Barcelona, you see it in other big cities, where someone somewhere has gone, hang on, we can't just bulldoze everything, we can't just remove the artistic quarter, we can't just force everyone out. Now, if you're from a big city, you'll probably be able to tell me some of the same stories from your city as I'm saying here. Certainly in Melbourne and Sydney, was down in Australia, people were like, there used to be a brilliant place, they told me, called The Cross, which was full of gigs and venues. And they were just like, it's just a wasteland now. And I'll get to some of the reasons why. But the first real reason is the idea that your state or government or, you know, elected representatives or whoever it is, they don't really care about these things. Only if it reflects well in terms of tourism. But the idea of protecting something like the cobblestone or protecting areas of Dublin that were rich in old character are just kind of gone. Because lots of people message me and they go, where do we go to see an Irish trad session? And I go, well, I'm not entirely sure anymore in Dublin. I know where you can go to maybe hear a few trad songs, but you're going to have to put up with whoever it is also playing you Coldplay songs and playing those horrible sort of pop by numbers acoustic guitar songs. That's not really a trad session. My friend Brian from the band Rack and Ruin is an incredible balladeer and singer. So I don't know, maybe he's playing somewhere, but all these things have been slowly forced out. The old Dublin around the corner from me is a big faded graffiti of Phil Lynott playing his bass, and it seems like a sort of metaphor for the city, that this old connection to what represented Irish artistic musical culture and the trad that all power to them, bands like Lancome are bringing back to notoriety. I think they're just winning awards in the UK and Ireland, but and using their voice to speak out about what's happening in Dublin, which I think is really powerful. But I'm in my own small way trying to add a little bit of volume to that, because the city is unrecognisable from the one that I grew up in, for good and for bad. I mean, you're far less likely to get your head kicked in on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock for having long hair. But most of my female friends will say, yeah, the city is a bit threatening now after midnight. And now that's a post-lockdown thing. And, there's just an awful lot of people who probably should be getting some mental health treatment or on the streets. There's a lot of other energies going on in the street that are quite negative at night. So a lot of people don't want late night living. But the late night living that was promised by the state during lockdown, like, put up with this and don't worry, we're going to make the city a 6 a.m. Place for you to go out and socialize in, is, you know, that's gone. That's dead in the water. Part of that is because of the insane costs. I mean, just having a beer will now be 7.50, 8 euro in many places in the city. Whereas before the lockdown, it was 5.25, 4.80, 5.50. And you can replicate that cost across everything. There's also nowhere to stay. In terms of Dublin, everyone who's tried to stay here, we get messages all the time. Hey, we bought tickets for your gig in Dublin. How come all the hotels are 289 euro? Well, if we're unlucky enough with Primordial to have picked the same day as there's a rugby match, Ireland versus England, Ireland versus France in Dublin, the hotels will be insanely expensive. If you're unlucky enough to have picked the same day as a big pop act, like you know, Taylor Swift announced a show here, and I think hotels instantly bumped up everything to €800 a room, €1,000 a room. There should be a law against it, but there isn't, because the government has no appetite for tackling that, just like they've no appetite for trying to safeguard elements of the city that should be of artistic or cultural merit. They're quite open to bulldozing everything down and rebuilding it with shiny, monuments to the grotesque process of unregulated capitalism, I guess. Unregulated, I said. Unregulated. There is a difference. There is a difference, Mr. Clinton. So a lot of reasons why, in answer to the many messages, in fact, too many messages that I'm getting about what do we do in Dublin, the city is closing at 1:30, 2 a.m. It's not a late night living city anymore. It's interesting as Ireland, to consider Ireland, to consider Dublin. There's this thing I often say, or often did say in interviews, when I say Ireland sometimes has this attitude of, there's two phrases that come to mind. One is the cutor, H-O-O-R, cutor, and unbailbocht, the poor mouth. Now we mix those two things together, and the cutor is the kind of the wily politician who takes backhanders, or the local businessman who, you know, pushes and shoves to get, money bumped off local, property developments, or the idea that you've always found a way to skirt around regulation, which in some terms I can understand. Of course, if you come from a poor country like Ireland historically, there is, I think, a greater cultural there's more of a social understanding of the idea that you better make your money right now without any concern about what's going to happen in a couple of years, because who knows where the economy might be, who knows if you have to emigrate, if you're a politician on the move, on the go, you're probably going to be out of a job in 3, 4, 5 years, so take what you can now. That's the kind of cute whorism, which is all about instant gratification, and the idea that you would safeguard an area of the city for cultural or artistic purposes just seems like a fool's errand on those circumstances. Then there's the bailbocht. The bailbocht means the poor mouth in Irish. And this is the sort of attitude that I think underpins our idea, or certain sectors of our idea, that nothing can be of any worth unless it's worth something to tourism. That our own inherent understanding of our cultural artistic merit is defined by how it relates to America, how it relates to as I said, tourists coming into the country. And the fact that what the cobblestone, I'll just use this as this metaphorical example, even though it's a real world example, the fact that this has some anchoring in a period of Irish history that we should relate to on a more proud level. You know, it's a very old statement of Irish traditional music in the city, and the government were just willing to go, knock it down. Hey, BlackRock, build your apartments there. Allegedly. Just plucking that as an example out of the the top shelves of my aging grey matter. But it's the idea, the bailbook, the sort of sorry for asking for that, sorry for this, sorry for that, the sort of never ending concept of cultural apology that leads us to just not see any merit in these things. Not all of us, but some of us, to go, why would anybody care about this? Then I think there's also the rather sad supply and demand about these things, that most of the people I see who are up in arms about the ever-changing shape of the city and the fact that it just looks, you know, that it's losing its culture and character, are older people. I'm not going to make a sort of argument that, one of those kind of, oh, young people suck kind of thing. But in terms of Dublin as somewhere where you can find a dive bar, you can find a trad session, you can find a band playing in a basement somewhere, you can do kind of, alternative things. You could have a 6 a.m. rave, you could have a this or the other. I'm increasingly led to sort of believe and understand and observationally see these are things young people don't seem to care about. They don't seem to care about these things at all. They aren't really interested in the countercultural aspects of, or musical aspects of culture that defined Dublin, or defined areas of Dublin 20, 30, 40 years ago. I remember the late 90s. Well, I remember the early 90s as well, and rave and ecstasy culture coming into Dublin and changing the face of socialising. In 1987 in Dublin, there was no You weren't staying out till 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. No night buses, taxis. You went out, you got pissed in the pub, you went home after having a fight over a bag of chips in the street and whatever else. Then things changed, things looked up a bit. And if you wanted to go to Der Spiegel tent, I think it's called, we were talking about the last night, me and my friend, or late night at the Olympia, or, you know, a late night show where you wanted, you could go out to see something cool at 4:30 in the morning. You could do that in Dublin. Now, not a chance. In fact, an awful lot of pubs are closing up weekdays at 10, 10:30, or not opening at all. They decide to close if there's only one or two people in there because it's just not worth their while. That's not when pubs close, though. And all of a sudden, your city gets a reputation for people coming here for looking for, well, you know, genuine tourists. And is there an ungenuine tourist? I'm not sure. People just coming in to spend money and they go, oh, you know, we want to go out on a Thursday at 12. And you've got to tell them you ain't going anywhere. There is nowhere to go. You're not going to get something nice to eat after 11. You're not going to do this, that, the other. It's like we've gone back to 1987 or 1988 on some level. But again, supply and demand. And the street around the corner from me, which I suppose is once a sort of artistic hub, yeah, you can go and see bands playing this, that, the other. But slowly but surely, all the little venues and interesting places disappear. Do we need another coffee shop? No. And you do feel that in a supply and demand issue, and even my friends who are into dance music are saying the dance music things are getting smaller and smaller, and yeah, they finish at 11, they finish at 12. I just went to see Marduk last week, popped up, did a little bit of singing with them, and the gig was over at 10:15. You got to be out, and they had to, everyone was, you know, pushed out by 10:30 because they have another club. So everything that's a little bit different always sacrifices itself to a venue that was probably not even a quarter as full to just listen to the ubiquitous sounds of pop music, which seems to have been all victorious. As I said, the same thing with my friends who listen to dance music. They're like, we once used to be able to go out till 4 or 5 and hear a DJ. Not anymore. So is this a supply and demand thing? Is it just because young people are just not interested, and the kind of people who are interested in going out and spending a ton of money in the city at night, they couldn't care less about all of the things that I've just been talking about? Could that be the sad, dark truth? You'll also see when you visit the city now, across the city are kind of fake new old pubs with names that are kind of very much like American English pubs. It always fascinated us when we went to America. There'd be like, Finney McGinty's Irish Saloon. And you're like, there's nobody's called that in Ireland. Tucker O'Reilly's. No one's called Tucker in Ireland. Sorry, Mr. Carlson. But nobody's called Tucker in Ireland. But now you see all these fake. If you are wandering around Dublin and you see one of these, half a hardware shop, half a pub, but it's really bright and shiny and new. This is the kind of pub that's probably been built to replace a genuine old pub that was kind of like that. And people go, it's just pubs, Alan. Come on, there's enough pubs in Ireland. You know what there is? Well, there was. But it's a part of Irish culture that's moving and changing and disappearing, this old element of our culture. That was, don't forget, these are the places where rebellions were fermented, where great poets, composed, where incredible Irish traditional players came from. And slowly but surely, the culture is just, the financial culture and element of investment is just removing all of these places. Around the corner from me was a good pub, the George Bernard Shaw, which had lots of cool things going for it. DJs and bands and, you know, food and whatever else, a food court. The whole square leveled and knocked down for faceless, high rises. Who knows what goes on there? I don't know. Maybe they're working on a solution to the Middle East problems and it'll all be worth it. Maybe they're working on a solution to, who knows? Who knows? However, my friends, I thought I would sort of make a bit of a podcast just about what's happening to cities, I think, across cultures. They're just sort of losing their cultural edge. And I think there's also a climate whereby some people will sort of make a fuss about, ascribing views like the protecting these kind of things to, you know, oh, it sounds like an alt-right comment or something like that. Nothing at all could be further from the truth as that. Like I said, the metaphor for the cobblestone for Irish traditional music, for it being a cornerstone of Irish culture and heritage. Like, as I said, as being highlighted by a band, the success of a band like Lancome lately, and how the media in general doesn't want to hear certain things they've got to say. There are incredible areas of Paris. You know too well that if the state decided to start bulldozing all these old streets and changing all of these old shops and nightclubs and bars, people would, you know, be up in arms. There's a cool artistic area in Zurich as well. Or maybe it's just me looking at these things through rose-tinted glasses. Well, not really rose-tinted glasses. I don't even know if anybody could ever say that. But this is happening in every city. And it's not what I would call gentrification either, because gentrification is not really the right word for it. It's something else. It's like a complete remodeling, restructuring of, you know, the architecture and the culture and the socio-political elements of a city. And so, in my own small way, I just thought I would give you a little insight. How is your city doing? How is its counterculture reacting? Are there protected areas of the city where they go, okay, I remember being in, I think I was in Ljubljana in Slovenia, and they just had this whole area, this sort of, I guess, you know, an area free from state intervention, so to say. No, I won't say an anarchist, vaguely anarchist kind of thing, but there was, you know, there was food and bands and people hanging out. And now, of course, there was security. You can't, can't quite have it all your own way, but it was really good. Or we just played in Lithuania with Primordial in January in a huge building that, when communism fell, was taken over from the state by artists and an artist collective, if I have understood it correctly. And the state, when the new government came in, went, you know what, you keep that, but, you know, keep it up to scratch. You know what you're doing. In terms of it being used for the wrong thing, etc. And it works. It works as a sort of an artistic collective. And those kind of things are sorely missed from Dublin, sorely missed from Ireland. And especially seeing as the elements of our, you know, arts council and state and government would hang their hat on these things being part of Irish identity. Indeed, my friends, Agitators Anonymous is just a little ramble, ramble about Dublin in the rare old times. Until next time, my friends, thank you for listening. But before I leave you, here for your delight and delectation is the country and western song about Agitators Anonymous. I tip my Stetson to you, Mr. Redmick. Here we go.
In the heart of rebellion, we gather around with Allo's voice and fierce rebel sound, from whiskey soaked tales to political rhymes. We raise hell with metal, breaking chains of all kinds.
With rocking voices, we say the outlaw's call.
Agitators Anonymous, standing tall, standing raw. Hard drinking and hard living, no compromise we see. We're the wild ones breaking boundaries, never meek. Agitators Anonymous, we're the fire and the spark in a world that tries to silence. We light up the dark with every riff and lyric. We fight for what is true in the mosh pits of rebellion. We've always got each other's backs, it's true. In a world that tries to silence, we light up the dark with every riff and lyric. We fight for what is true in the mosh pits of rebellion. We've always got each other's backs, it's true.